Chapter 74. The Augereau of Castiglian Days. Augereau, nay, sire, I still should be the Augereau of glorious Castiglian. Could you give the boys of Italy back again to me? Napoleon, well, let it drop. Only I notice round me an atmosphere of scopeless apathy wherein I do not share. Augereau, there are reasons, sire, good reasons for despondence. As I came I learned, past question, that Bavaria swerves on the very pivot of desertion. This adds some 80,000 to our foes. Napoleon, irritated, that consummation long has threatened us. Would that you showed the steeled fidelity you used to show. Except me, all are slack. Demurred, why, even you yourself, my brother-in-law, have been inclining to abandon me. Murat, vehemently, I, sire, it is not so. I stand and swear the grievous imputation is untrue. You should know better than believe these things, and well remember I have enemies who ever wait to slander me to you. Napoleon, more calmly, ah yes, yes, that is so. And yet you have deigned to weigh the feasibility of treating me as Austria has done. But I forgive you. You are a worthy man. You feel real friendship for me. You are brave. Yet I was wrong to make a king of you. If I had been content to draw the line at vice-king, as with young Eugene, no more, as he has labored you'd have labored to. But as full monarch, you have foraged rather for your own pot than mine. Murat and the marshal are silent, and look at each other with troubled countenances. Napoleon goes to the table at the back, and bends over the charts with Colincourt, dictating desultory notes to the secretaries. Spirit ironic, a seer might say this savors of a sad last supper talk twixt his disciples and this Christ of war. Enter an attendant. Attendant, the Saxon king and queen, and the princess enter the city gates, your majesty. They seek the shelter of the civic walls against the risk of capture by allies. Napoleon, ah, so? My friend Augustus, is he near? I will be prompt to meet him when he comes, and safely quarter him.
He returns to the map. An interval. The clock strikes midnight. The emperor rises abruptly, sighs, and comes forward.
I now retire, comrades. Good night, good night. Remember well, all must prepare to grip with gory death in the now voidless battle. It will be a great one and a critical one, in brief, that will seal France's fate, and yours, and mine. All, fervidly, we'll do our utmost, by the holy heaven. Napoleon, ah, what was that?
He pulls back the window curtain.
Several, it is our enemies, whose southern hosts are signaling to their north.
A white rocket is beheld high in the air. It is followed by a second, and a third. There is a pause, during which Napoleon and the rest wait motionless. In a minute or two, from the opposite side of the city, three colored rockets are sent up, in evident answer to the three white ones. Napoleon muses, and lets the curtain drop.
Napoleon, yes, Schwarzenberg to Blücher. It must be, to show that they are ready. So are we.
He goes out without saying more. The marshals and other officers withdraw. The room darkens and ends the scene.
Scene 2, the same. The city and the battlefield, Leipzig is viewed in aerial perspective from a position above the south suburbs, and reveals itself as standing in a plain, with rivers and marshes on the west, north, and south of it, and higher ground to the east and southeast. At this date it is somewhat in the shape of the letter D, the straight part of which is the river Pleiss. Except as to this side it is surrounded by armies, the inner horseshoe of them being the French defending the city, the outer horseshoe being the Allies about to attack it. Far over the city, as it were at the top of the Dietlandenthal, we see Marmont stationed to meet Blücher when he arrives on that side. To the right of him is Ney, and further off to the right, on heights eastward, MacDonald.
then round the curve towards the south in order, Augereau, Lauriston, behind whom is Napoleon himself and the reserve of guards, Victor Atwatcha, and Poniatowski. Near the Place River at the bottom of the D near him are the cavalry of Kellerman and Milhaud, and in the same direction Murat with his, covering the great avenues of approach on the south. Outside all these stands Schwarzenberg's army, of which, opposed to MacDonald and Lauriston, are Kleine's Austrians and Zieten's Prussians, covered on the flank by Cossacks under Platov. Opposed to Victor and Poniatowski are Mirfeld and Hess Homburg's Austrians, Wittgenstein's Russians, Kleist's Prussians, Gillet's Austrians, with Liechtenstein's and Thielmann's light troops. Thus reaching round across the Elster into the morass on our near left the lower point of the D, semi-chorus I of rumors, aerial music, this is the combat of Napoleon's hope, but not of his assurance. Shrunk in power he broods beneath October's clammy cope, while hemming hordes wax denser every hour. Semi-chorus too, he knows that, though in equal fight he stand as heretofore the matched of none, a feeble skill is propped by numbers might, and now three hosts close round to crush out one. Dumb show, the Leipzig clocks imperturbably strike nine, and the battle which is to decide the fate of Europe, and perhaps the world, begins with three booms from the line of the Allies. They are the signal for a general cannonade of devastating intensity. So massive is the contest, that we soon fail to individualize the combatants as beings, and can only observe them as amorphous drifts, clouds, and waves of conscious atoms, surging and rolling together, can only particularize them by race, tribe, and language. Nationalities from the uttermost parts of Asia here meet those from the Atlantic edge of Europe for the first and last time. By noon the sound becomes a loud droning, uninterrupted and breathe-like, as from the pedal of an organ kept continuously down. Chorus of rumors, now triple battle beats about the town, and now contracts the huge elastic ring of fighting flesh, as those within go down, or spreads, as those without show faltering. It becomes apparent that the French have a particular intention, the Allies only a general one. That of the French, is to break through the enemy's center, and surround his right. To this end Napoleon launches fresh columns, and simultaneously out in it supports Victor against Eugene of Württemberg's right, while on the other side of him the cavalry of Milhaud and Kellerman prepares to charge. Napoleon's combination is successful, and drives back Eugene. Meanwhile Schwarzenberg is stuck fast, useless in the marshes between the Pleiss and the Elster. By 3 o'clock the Allied center, which has held out against the assaults of the French right and left, is broken through by cavalry under Murat, later Marbourg, and Kellerman. The bells of Leipzig ring. Chorus of the pities, those chimings, ill-advised and premature. Who knows if such vast valor will endure? The Austro-Russians are withdrawn from the marshes by Schwarzenberg. But the French cavalry also get entangled in the swamps, and simultaneously Marmont is beaten at Mockern. Meanwhile Ney, to the north of Leipzig, having heard the battle raging southward, leaves his position to assist it. He has nearly arrived, when he hears Blücher attacking at the point he came from, and sends back some of his divisions. Bertrand has kept open the west road to Linden and the Rhine, the only French line of retreat. Evening finds the battle a drawn one. With the nightfall three blank shots reverberate hollowly. Semi-chorus I of rumors, they sound to say that, for this moaning night, as nature sleeps, so too shall sleep the fight, neither the victor. Semi-chorus too, but, for France and him, half one is losing. Chorus, yea, his hopes dropped him, since nothing less than victory today had saved a cause whose ruinous delay. The night gets thicker, and no more is seen. Scene 3, the same, from the tower of the Pleissenburg.
The tower commands a view of a great part of the battlefield. Day has just dawned, and citizens, saucerite from anxiety and sleeplessness, are discover watching.
first citizen, the wind increased at midnight while I watched, with flapping showers, and clouds that combed the moon, till dawn began out heaving this huge day, pallidly as if scared by its own issue, this day that the Allies with bonded might, have vowed to deal their felling finite blow. Second citizen, so must it be. They have welded close the coop wherein our luckless Frenchmen are engailed with such compression, that their front has shrunk from 5 miles farthest to, but half as far. Men say Napoleon made resolve last night to marshal a retreat. If so, his way is by the bridge of Linden.
They look across in the cold east light at the long strait. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.